Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline Unacceptable in large capital letters. This is from the Pantograph editorial board, and it states, Unacceptable. That one word sums up the pain, dysfunction, and instability capital politicians have inflicted on Illinois by their failure to provide a permanent, balanced state budget for 2 years. As the state's credit ratings have been repeatedly downgraded, as residents sought greener pastures elsewhere, as community colleges and universities have been gutted, as businesses closed up shop, and as social service agencies turned away the most vulnerable residents, elected officials have failed to do their job and show the political courage to make the necessary painful decisions. Who they blame is determined by whether a D or R follows their name. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner is to blame. Oh, no, it's Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. Oh, don't forget the decades of politicians who made terrible financial decisions based on what would get them reelected, not what was fiscally prudent. The finger-pointing has gone on far too long. The state's fiscal problems have created a crisis throughout Illinois, except in the state capital. Maybe the dome deflects the misery that permeates the rest of Illinois, but it can no longer shield elected officials from accepting the blame each member of the House and Senate and the governor bears for the atrocious state of the state. The situation is so urgent that we've taken the unusual step, which we did about a year ago, too, to send this message to our legislative leaders. Spearheaded by the Springfield Journal-Register, about 60 other Illinois daily and weekly newspapers are running a front-page editorial today through the end of the week. The stack of unpaid bills tops $14 billion. The 2016 fiscal year ended last June with a budgetary deficit of $9.6 billion. We shudder to think what it will be at the end of next month. The five state-funded pension systems are short about $130 billion. Each new financial report paints an even bleaker picture. Every sign of progress has been marred by partisan politics. The Senate approved a budget on Tuesday with no Republican support. Even if the House concurs, Rauner will likely veto a measure only supported by Democrats. A bipartisan compromise is needed for Illinois to persevere. The lack of a budget has not directly inconvenienced most residents, so it's been easy to ignore. But the impasse affects us all. In order for the state to pay off its unpaid bills, shore up the pension plans, and eliminate its deficit, it would cost every Illinoisan roughly $12,000 each. Here's how you calculate your share of the bill. If every one of the state's 12.8 million residents kicked in $1,094, we could pay off the $14 billion in unpaid bills. The unfunded pension liability is an estimated $130 billion due over the next 30 years. If we need to ensure today that it will be solvent, each resident would need to contribute $10,156 so state retirees will get their retirement benefits. Don't forget the $9.6 billion structural budget deficit at the end of fiscal year 2016 and add in $750 more per person. The ugly truth is we are all going to pay for it somewhere. And because politicians have abdicated their most basic duty for 2 years, the necessary cuts will be deeper and tax hikes will be higher than they should be. Are you seething yet? Good. Now get informed on the issues and encourage others to do the same. There's a reason that millions get spent on relentless, nasty political ads. They work. They sway the casual voter who does not care enough to dig for facts, or they leave others too disgusted by the spectacle and negativity to participate. Elections should not be decided by who can throw the most cash at attack ads. It's up to all of us to keep that from being the determinant. Next, get involved. Pick up your phone and call your state representative, your state senator, and the governor's office. Tell them how they've made an embarrassment to be from in Illinois. Share your anger that the significant issues that need their attention. School funding reform, creating a thriving economy, and building public universities into centers of innovation, to name a few, have been ignored. A year ago, we declared enough. The day after, the governor and lawmakers passed a 6-month stopgap spending plan that did not provide lasting stability. That's not good enough. It's time to demand that Governor Rauner and other lawmakers do what is right. It's time for the budget to come first. To not do so will cement their legacy with one word that encapsulates the sorry condition of our state: unacceptable. Tell them what you think. In a separate box, we have addresses and phone numbers for Governor Bruce Rauner, House Speaker Michael Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, Senate Minority Leader Christine Radagon, and House Minority Leader Jim Durkin. I will read them as follows. Governor Bruce Rauner, 207 State House, Springfield, Illinois, 62706. Phone 217-782-0244. And email governor@state.il.us. I'll repeat that. This is the email for Governor Rauner. governor@state.il.us. Next, House Speaker Michael Madigan. Address 300 Capitol Building, Springfield, Illinois, 62706. Phone 217-782-5350. Email mmadigan, at housedem.state.il.us. Senate President John Cullerton. Address 327 Capitol Building, Springfield, Illinois, 62706. Phone 217-782-2788. Email John, J-O-H-N, at senatorcullerton.com. Senate Minority Leader Christine Radagon. 309G Capitol Building, Springfield, Illinois, 62706. Telephone 217 782-9407. Email Christine, Christine, at Senator Radogan, that's Radogno, .com. House Minority Leader Jim Durkin. Address 316 Capitol Building, Springfield, Illinois, 62706. And phone 217-782-0494. Email Durkin, that's capital D-U-R-K-I-N, at capital I, capital L, house, that's capital H-O-U-S-E, capital G-O-P dot org. At the close of this editorial, we have a picture of the House and Senate together in the Capitol offices, in the rotunda where they all sit as they do their elections, their individual desks. And then we have a little picture here. It says, Illinois held hostage 2 years without a budget. And this is what is over the addresses of the individual governor, the House Speaker, etc., on the front page. And that concludes our first article, and we will move on now. So, again, in government and politics, it's bikes share 309 exceeding expectations. This is by Dirk Bai at the Pentagraph staff, and it's out of Bloomington. Here we go. A rainy spring hasn't stopped Bloomington Normal's new bike share program from speeding out of the gate. 2 months after launching, the town of Bloomington, the town of Normal's Bike Share 309 program hit 750 rides on its way to a goal of about 3,300 in the first year, and officials see potential to do right, to do better. Our numbers are really good when you factor how much rain we've had and crazy wind. You can't catch a break in spring, said Mercy Davidson, town planner and the program organizer. Bike Share 309 lets adults use any mobile phone to rent a bicycle from one of 9 Twin City locations and return it to any of those locations. Rides are $3 an hour, but riders can buy a $10 monthly or $40 annual membership to make the first hour free. Customers from local colleges and universities can buy annual memberships for $25. To date, about 400 riders have registered for the program versus a goal of about 1,800 this year, though 19% have signed up but not used a bike. About 30 riders have bought annual memberships, which Davison said is about right, as a percentage of users by estimates from Zagster, the Cambridge, Massachusetts-based company behind BikeShare 309. The town also is tracking repeat ridership. 39% of those who use a bike do so at least twice. Really, this program started a bit late to catch too many students, but we expect it to really take off in August, said Davidson. We're still heavily in the marketing phase overall. The most popular bike share location is uptown, as expected. Davidson said she's surprised by the popularity of the rental station at Connie Link Amphitheater, which is near the intersection of Constitution Trail and Linden Street. We're going to need more bike parking spaces there, said Davidson. That The ConnieLink station is popular isn't a surprise to Zagsters, said company communications manager John Turbish. This type of technology works very well with trail systems, he said, of Zagsters' platform, which allows riders to keep a bike and accrue charges rather than exchange it for another after a specific period of time, as many bike share programs do. The general perception of bike sharing is that it's for urban areas and not trails, but in our experience, it can be a powerful tool to that end. Other Bike Share 309 locations are Advocate Bromine Medical Center, Illinois State University, Cardinal Court, Schroeder Hall, Tri-Towers, and Watterson Towers. Illinois Wesleyan University Hanson Student Center and the Route 66 Visitor Center in downtown Bloomington. Despite hosting Zagsters Station, the City of Bloomington, ISU, and IWU weren't paying into the program, and Davidson said the town isn't currently pressing that issue. Bromine has agreed to pay $10,000 per year and is advertising on the bikes and stations. Zagster will receive $84,600 per year for the next 3 years, a $3,287 setup fee, and a 7% of rental proceeds to run the program, with the rest of the revenue going to the town. Normal expects to regroup 20% of its expenses through user fees. Turbush said users across Bloomington Normal can expect an improved checkout system soon. Operations will be conducted by mobile phone, and users can also sign up at zagster.com/bikeshare309. Our old locking platform is based around a U-lock that's under physical key, but this will be based around a Bluetooth ring lock, he said. At the touch of a button or a smartphone, the ring lock springs open. There's still a keypad so people with no smartphone can get a code via text message. Davidson said the town will watch usage trends to determine what other changes to make to the system. She said some local apartment management companies have asked about getting Zagster stations at their complexes. We're excited to see what the usage looks like as we get later into spring and into summer, said Turbush. And below, that concludes the article below. We have pictures from David Prober with Steve Potter of Bloomington and his son Jacob looking over the bikes at the rental station at Broadway and North Street in Uptown Normal. And then we have a picture of Bike Share 309 stands ready for rental Monday at McLean County Museum of History in downtown Bloomington. And finally, we have a picture of all the bike shares. It says this Bike Share 309 rental station at the McLean County Museum of History includes a fact sheet that explains how the system works. So it's a nice compliment to the area. And then we will move on with international news from the Associated Press. A warning of imminent attack. Britain raises the threat level. Manchester, England. As officials hunted for accomplices of suicide bomber and British Prime Minister warned another attack could be imminent. Thousands of people poured into the streets of Manchester in a defiant vigil Tuesday for victims of a blast at a pop concert, the latest apparent target of Islamic extremists seeking to rattle life in the West. The attack left at least 22 dead, including an 8-year-old girl, shattering the revelry at a show by American singer Ariana Grande, where strains of electric pop and the sways of innocent young faces quickly gave way to an explosion, a flood of screams, and a stampede of panicked concert goers. many clutching pink balloons and wearing the kitten ear headbands popularized by Grande. Touching on that disconnect, British Prime Minister Theresa May said, "We struggle to comprehend the warped and twisted mind that sees a room packed with young children not as a scene to cherish, but as an opportunity for carnage." May said Britain's terror threat level had been raised to critical, meaning another attack may be imminent. The status means armed soldiers could be deployed instead of police at public events, including sports matches. The threat level had been at the second highest rung of severe for several years. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the bloodbath Monday, though a top American intelligence official said the assertion could not be verified. Manchester Police Chief Ian Hopkins raided two sites in the northern English city, setting off a controlled explosion in one and arresting a 23-year-old man in a third location. May said Abadi was born and raised in Britain, and a European security official said he was of Libyan descent. The official spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to comment on ongoing investigations. At least 20 heavily armed, helmeted police surrounded a modest red brick house listed as Abadi's address in a mixed Manchester suburb at midday on Tuesday and blasted down the door. It was so quick, these cars just pulled up and all the officers with guns, dogs, jumped out of the car and said to us, "Get in the house now," said Simon Turner, 46, who lives nearby. Later, forensic officers in white coveralls were seen going in and out of the property. Details on Abadi were slow to trickle out. He was described by neighbors as tall, thin young man who often wore traditional Islamic dress, but few said they knew him well. Alan Kenzie, 52, who lives across the street, said his neighbor would often be picked up by another young man in a Toyota and often returned late at night. "I thought he worked in a takeaway or something because of his late hours," Kenzie said. Police also searched an apartment in a nearby area that British media reported belonged to Abadi's brother Ismail. Later Tuesday, thousands of people, some holding up signs proclaiming "We love MCR," an abbreviation for Manchester, held a silent vigil for victims. Lord Mayor Eddie Newman and the city's police chief were among the speakers in front of City Hall in Albert Square, where a banner with a website for a Muslim group said, "Love for all, hatred for none." May called raising the country's terror level threat and deploying soldiers to patrol key sites proportionate and sensible response to the suicide bombing. There are two major sports events in London on Saturday, the Wembley Stadium hosting the soccer's FA Final Cup final, which Prince William is due to attend, and Twickenham hosting rugby's Premiership final. Monday's bombing made Manchester Arena one of the largest indoor concert venues in Europe, the latest apparent target of Islamic extremists striking at the heart of Western culture, an ideology baffling to the panicked young faces emerging from the concert. Among those confirmed killed was Georgianne Callender, whose death was reported by her former school, which posted a photo of her in her school uniform on its website and described her as a lovely and very popular young woman. Also killed was 8-year-old Safi Roussas, who a teacher called simply a beautiful little girl in every aspect of the world, who was warm and kind and unassuming with a creative flair. The little girl's mother and sister were among the 59 wounded, which included at least 12 children under the age of 16. Grande, who was not injured in the blast, tweeted, "Broken from the bottom of my heart. I am so, so sorry. I don't have words." The bombing took place after Grande closed the show with Dangerous Woman and left the stage, and the audience streamed towards the city's main train station. It scattered bolts and other metal scraps apparently intended to maximize the bloodshed. People tumbled over guardrails and one another clawing towards an escape. There was a massive bang, and then everyone just went really quiet, and that's when the screaming started, said 25-year-old Ryan Molloy. As we came outside to Victoria Station, there were just people all over the floor covered in blood. And at the conclusion of the article, there is a picture of the memorial that's been posted by, this picture's by Emilio Morente, and it's a man lights a candle after a vigil in Albert Square, Manchester, England, Tuesday, the day after the suicide attack at an Ariana Grande concert that left 22 people dead as it ended on Monday. As we prepare to close out this half hour, we will quickly go through two items on the Daily Digest. The first is a vigil to honor an Irving student. This is out of Bloomington. Dallin Childs will be honored with a candlelight vigil Wednesday night at Irving Elementary School in Bloomington. Dallin, 11, was an Irving fifth grader who died May 16th after a year-long battle with cancer, brain cancer. Rain or shine, the public vigil will be at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday outside the school at 602 West Jackson Street in Bloomington. The Reverend Larry Van Gundy will lead with prayer. There also will be a student-made video slideshow, songs, and candle lighting. Additional parking will be available across the street at St. Mary's Catholic Church. The second note is an economic group makes local stop. This is from Bloomington, and it suggests that a 200-mile march from Chicago to Springfield is stopping in Bloomington Normal on Wednesday to promote action on income taxes. Sponsored by Fair Economy Illinois, marchers are advocating for a state budget that would raise the tax rate for the wealthy and close corporate tax loopholes. The group is having a listening session 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 1613 East Emerson, Bloomington, to hear from people about how the budget impasse has affected them. This kind of goes along with the editorial you heard earlier in the broadcast. At this point, we will be drawing to a close, and we will begin the second part shortly. We're going to take a short break now, and we'll return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Wednesday, May 24th. Please stay tuned.